On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are taking a look at BJ Novak's What If scenarios in anthology series The Premise on Star, pitting the legal system against old money in Show Trial on BBC One, and investigating the murder of a nurse in Dalgleish on Channel 5, which also stars Elliot Salt, who plays Terra in Fate, the Wink Saga. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, a show that was genuinely surprised to discover that Dalgleish was an adaptation of the P.D. James mystery novels and not, in fact, a multi-part biopic of Scottish footballing legend Kenny.
Oh, very
and
good.
If that sounds just like a pretty shit joke, therefore par for the course for me, I am 100% serious. That is genuinely not a joke. That is actually what I thought it
That's
was.
Brilliant.
And I had no idea why you picked it. And as soon as you said get Dalgleish, I'm like, why are we doing it? I was like, I hate
this
football.
Oh, I
don't want to watch a fucking documentary anyway.
Oh,
and I was just
God.
Like, Kenny Dalgleish, why would you do this to me, boy? And I was like, oh, it's not that at all.
I mean, first of all, I should put Kenny Dalgleish is spelled differently to
Miss
Dalgleish. There's no E in Kenny.
Okay.
I'm here for a Kenny Dalgleish 10-part biopic, though. That would be interesting. He is still very much with us and was very funny when he was caught last week when Liverpool beat Man United 5-0. And it cut to Alex Ferguson looking, this is TV, cut from Alex Ferguson looking furious to Kenny Dalgleish going, fucking hell, mouthing fucking and being thrilled that his team were being. So yeah, it could have been an Dalgleish thing. There is an Arsene Wenger film coming out soon, which we could gratuitously review on this podcast.
Don't feel
maybe
we have
even
to.
It's a film.
Don't feel we have to.
Okay.
It's fine. But these are my references. Like, if you were you to ask me to name footballers, I can name Kenny Dalgleish, Bobby Charlton, Kevin Keegan, and Chris Waddle. Oh, and Gary Lineker.
I love the random.
And I think that may be all I can do.
Of it. It's brilliant. Yeah. Like, you haven't heard of, I don't know, David Beckham.
Oh, I've heard of him. Yes, I have heard of David Beckham.
Right.
I have heard of David Beckham.
Good.
Who
would I have helmed that's a good question. I don't know. I think I'd have Sarah Phillips writing it.
Yes.
I think she could tune into the Dalgleish personality.
Sarah, if you are listening to this, and I know you are, your next project is just, wait for it, Kenny.
Yeah.
Kenny Dalgleish biopic 10 parts.
Starts in the 70s. He's like, that was his peak of his success was in the 70s and then goes through a little bit in the 80s and then, and beyond. So that'd be good. Who could direct it though?
Who would make me care about this?
Yeah. Maybe the guy who's directed the Tower, which we'll be reviewing next week, Jim Loach, son of Ken. He'd be good. He could
do
it. Yeah.
That's a good.
He directed our favourite thing with Lenny James' show. You know, what was it called?
He did Save Me
Too. He did Save Me Too.
Yeah,
he's very good.
I almost wish that he was like directing Marvel movies and stuff, and the apple had fallen that far from the tree that he's been like disowned by his dad for like selling out and going mainstream.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Anyway, Dalgleish. Yeah.
Dalgleish. Yes. So yes, we will in fact be doing Dalgleish, not to do with Kenny. All the millennial listeners are going, Kenny who? Kenny Dalgleish.
The weird thing is Bertie Carvel, who is Inspector Dalgleish, could actually play Kenny Dalgleish as well.
Could he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He looks, it's kind of similar facially, I think, roughly. I mean, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So, Sarah, if you're listening, that's your casting sorted as well. We're all over this.
We're too good to you guys. We really are.
Feeding you. It's gold. It's absolute gold.
It is.
So, things that we've been watching this week. Let's talk about those.
Right, I've got a lot to get through.
Oh,
I warn you now.
I'm
sorry. I've just got a lot to get through. So I've just literally finished watching Doctor Who.
Yes.
The first episode.
Oh, well, are we going to do this now? Or are we going to do Doctor Who now? Fuck it. Let's do it now.
I mean, it's already been on.
Let's
do
it now.
It is a thing we've been watching.
Yeah.
So we're recording this.
Yes.
We're recording this on Thursday. It is Thursday, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're recording this on Thursday morning. Doctor Who airs this Sunday, but the podcast goes out on Monday. So everyone else will already have seen it, but you are special because you have seen it.
So finally got the link off to various to and fro this morning with the poor BBC people. It's Doctor Who Flux. This is the 6-part. It's basically a Jodie Whittaker's final season in full. There'll then be 3 specials after that. But it's a final season as such, as a whole season. 6 episodes. It's this. All I can say is, I'm just reeling from the whole thing. It's a lot to take in. It's a huge, big thing. It's got its special subtitle Flux to emphasize how huge and big it is. And it is gigantically massive. It's like the whole universe is about to be destroyed, kind of thing, by a thing called Flux. And there are loads of monsters in it from previous periods. The Weeping Angels are in it. Sontarans are in it. There's weird, like, skeletal, new, freaky things, which are really creepy and good. It's the first episode set on Halloween. So there's a whole kind of Halloween joke thing going on about, you know, John Bishop is the new companion. He arrives and his character thinks that these beasts that are coming into invading his house are people dressed as Halloween costumes. Oh, quite a good joke. So it was a lot to take in. There was a huge amount. This is an ongoing 6-part story, and there's a huge amount that Chris Chibnall, the writer, had to establish, introducing all these different elements, and it was quite confusing, and there's a lot to take in, but I'm there for it. But it was great fun. Very comedic. I would say one of the most comedic episodes.
So leaning more into the comedy.
Leaning quite heavily into the comedy, yeah.
And is this the last season before RTD takes over?
Yeah, effectively, this is the start of Chris Chibnall's swan song as well. So Chris Chibnall and Jodie Whittaker both agreed to do 3 series and then out. That was their plan, their secret plan. This is the beginning of the end, basically, effectively.
Wow.
And I enjoyed it, yeah, but it's a lot. I need to watch it again to take it all in. But I think the main reaction everyone's going to have is, oh my God, there's so much going on. He's definitely gone for spectacle. It's almost like it got an Avengers Endgame quality to it, bringing back all these different strands.
The Avengers Endgame of Doctor Who.
Yeah. But obviously, Russell T. Davis has been mooting that Doctor Who should be at that level of ambition and, you know, kind of epicness, if you like, for ages. And I think Christian Hall certainly is clearly of a similar bent, so to speak. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Go on then, what else?
Right, and so much.
What else is on this massive list? Reading off in front of me. There is a list that takes up an entire page of your notebook.
It's in my notes.
All right.
So obviously Curb started last week.
Yes, which we couldn't review either.
We couldn't review that. It was like a dream come true for me because, as I said, I think as a news story, in the build-up, Albert Brooks is in it. Mm. Albert Brooks is one of my favourite filmmakers of all time. At least 2 of his films are in my top 10, top 20 of all time.
Yeah.
He is in the first episode. He was in the first episode that went out last Monday. It was fantastic. The idea was that Albert Brooks, this legendary guy, wanted to have his own funeral that he could watch. So he's like, you know, funerals are wasted on the dead because dead people don't get to know what everyone's saying about them. Yeah. So he set up his funeral with everyone, and like Larry had to be one of the, you know, make a speech, and John Hamm was there and all these friends and family, while Albert Brooks watches from upstairs in his house, in his bedroom, with his partner on the bed. And it was a brilliant thing. Of course, Larry furious at the whole idea of it, and that clash between Larry and Albert Brooks was absolutely brilliant. There was a huge amount of other stuff going on, but that was just a dream come true for me, the whole Albert Brooks element. I wanted to mention Angela Black, which has been going on, which is going on weekly on ITV, and a massive kind of twisty, total kind of reset, if you like, at the end of the last episode that went out last Sunday. In fact, by the time you're listening to this on Monday, there'll be another episode on top of that. But I think
is that the finale?
Episode 4. No, there's 6 of them.
Oh, 6.
So yeah, remember when we thought, is there enough? When we reviewed it, is there enough story? How are they going to fill this out?
It turns out there's enough.
It turns out there is, because it's gone down such a new, interesting route at the end of episode 3. And I'm really there for it. I think it's really, really clever, really interesting, unusual.
Still a difficult watch? Or was that mainly just the first episode?
Less actual domestic abuse. I think the first episode was the most difficult watch to watch from that point of view, establishing that character. And I think quite rightly they took the criticism. We know that this guy is a fucking horrendous abuser. Mm. We don't need to keep showing that.
Good.
You know, it's enough that we are aware of it. So I'm really enjoying that. American Horror Story. I watched the first episode. Your favourite, Beth.
Gritting my teeth.
How is Ryan?
Right. Well, so the interesting thing about American Horror Story, the new series, double feature, is that it's got a jokey reference to the fact that the main character is a TV writer.
Oh,
and has taken on too much.
Oh my God.
And there's lots of references to the fact that he's spreading himself too thin.
Right.
And then he has a kind of blank, and doesn't know what to do next. So it's kind of like, it's kind of taking the piss. He's aware. Ryan Murphy, let's just say, has been listening to Beth. He's aware that he's now kind of, people are like, you're just doing too much. You need to calm down.
Yeah.
You need to focus on quality rather than quantity. But I have to say, I really enjoyed the first episode.
Okay.
I think American Horror Story might be my favourite thing that he does, apart from the genius that was American Crime Story, OJ.
Yeah.
But he wasn't really that involved in that. He produced it, but it was completely written and directed by other people. So this is more his thing, which you can tell, because it's got loads of like twisted and perverse elements. But Macaulay Culkin is in it as this like meth head, kind of camp meth head character, and he is phenomenal. So I really enjoyed that first episode, I have to say. I'm nearly finished, but not quite. The final thing I wanted to mention is The Sinner, is
yes. Well, now, when's that back here?
The Sinner. Well, what happens with The Sinner? It's a really weird thing. I mean, as if TV generally isn't confusing enough with your Netflix, your Amazon Prime, your normal channels, your American version. The Sinner, which is on the USA network in America, is available on iTunes, British iTunes.
Is it?
To pay for it, yes.
This
and American iTunes, yes. They did this with the last season. And I just noticed, I was flicking around on my iTunes, and I'm like, there's the new series of The Sinner, season 4. So me being me, I have to watch it, because I paid like my £4.
All of it's available?
No, the first two, weekly. Right, it's going out weekly. So Netflix waits till the whole thing is finished in America, then they put the whole thing out in
and
one
they're
go.
Dropping on iTunes
it's
as they are in America.
£4 an episode to rent?
Yeah. £2 an episode. £4 for two.
I was going to say, you get paid too much.
Or you can get a season pass for about £20.
Right,
However that
So, as you say, to confuse it, so it airs weekly in America, it drops on iTunes in the UK, and then Netflix will get it once it's all aired.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Exactly. It's bewildering. But I just love that show so much.
Well, we're going to obviously review that properly when it drops on Netflix.
Let me just say, I love the first two episodes. And it is the best thing about it is it's somehow making the fact that Bill Pullman's detective character, who's now retired with a remember that woman, the artist woman?
Yeah,
so they're together. Right. I'm not going to say much more about it because we review it properly. Sorry. Thank you. My email notifications were loud. So all I'll say is they're somehow making it believable that this guy, this detective, who's now retired and has been through three spectacularly complex mysteries involving some kind of weird faith/philosophy.
And been buried alive.
He's now back with another fourth mystery that involves another weird faith philosophical thing going on. And by the way, his perverse sex. You don't remember his perverse sex?
What's
the word? Not felicitations. What's the word? His peccadillos, whatever.
Yes.
That's back.
He has proclivities.
His proclivities are well and truly back. And there are other people with other weird proclivities as well. It's quite controversial in what I think it might be.
I'd forgotten about that he has that whole kink side
really,
to him.
The kink side wasn't really, but it's back
in
full.
It was
big
in the first season, wasn't it? And then it's kind of, it's faded into the background.
Yeah. Well, it's back.
Wow.
So,
Bill Pullman being spanked.
Well, I'm just saying, Bill Pullman sexy, and I'm just saying now, I'm all in favour of older people of a certain age.
He's my president. He's my POTUS.
Right, sorry, Beth. Yeah, from Independence Day,
I mean, it's quite presidential behaviour, so that's fine.
Yeah, you're right, of a certain type of president, so anyway, loving it. It's back if you're really impatient and you just want to watch loads of things constantly, then it is back. It's on iTunes. I think that's it on my list of things.
I've just did one or two things there. You haven't watched much TV this week. Been out a lot, have you?
I think that's it.
Wow.
Amazing.
So here's the thing that I did. I didn't watch any reality TV because obviously, but I felt like I did. And let me tell you why. So I went to an event last night, and obviously we go to press events as journalists and stuff for launches and things. And they're very certain. Now I got invited to an event and I got there and it turned out it wasn't a press event. It was an influencer event.
What the fuck?
Which they had allowed some press to go to. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And it's a different species, but because they're all Instagram focused, like it's a very visual medium.
Yeah.
They like it's like being, I imagine, at the casting session for like Married at First Sight or something like that, where they're all larger than life weirdos. And I use that term affectionately.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, what is going on? And because like they all, Instagram, they have distinct visual identities. There was this guy in this pink velour tracksuit with like chains around his neck. And there was another guy with this huge hair and this massive been like all these hugely garish, I almost want to say costumes rather than outfits.
Yeah.
And I was walking around and I'm turning up like in my shabby little jacket and my little shirt that's all creased and needs an iron. And like I stuck out like an absolute sore thumb as the only sort of journalist there. And all of these influencers, as just the way they talk to each other, and they're all like constantly shooting selfies and flashing peace signs at the camera. And I was just like, I have never felt A, so old, and B, so wildly uncool in my entire existence. And genuinely, I thought this right here, this is what reality TV is. Like, it's this. It's these caricatures of people doing mundane shit. So going to a thing. But it's just, but
what was the screening of, though?
It wasn't a screening. It was a launch. I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to, like, throw the people who did it under the bus, you know. So that seems a bit harsh. But it was a launch for a thing.
Right.
That's what it, and because it was an influencer event, but they decided because they had some extra, we might as well get some of our press along as well. And
might as well get some normal looking people.
And some of it turns out was just me because no one else went out. And I just went in there. And I even went out to the publicist afterwards. I was like, genuinely, what the fuck is going on up there? And they were laughing. Like, you know, like, yeah, you're obviously we don't normally mix press and influencers, but this is quite interesting. It fascinated me.
I've been to one of those as well, funnily enough. I went to Succession Now did a, you know, this, you can watch it on Sky Q, wherever, on Now. And Now it's the streaming platform, basically. And they had a big dinner at the Gherkin in London, and there were influencers there, and you're right, they completely have a different way of dealing with this event. I was just there, like, I took the odd photo and I had dinner, and then I went to the London Film Festival screening, which I talked about in our Succession special. But the influencers are videoing, obviously doing all their thing, and it is a different world, dressed up to the nines.
In these,
it's fascinating,
absolutely wild outfits. I mean, some of them, like, just I mean, I was captivated by how they looked, in that, because it genuinely was. It was like watching Drag Race or something. It was just fascinating, but not because they were in drag, but because they were so.
You hastened to add.
No, they weren't. They weren't in drag at all. There was no drag that I noticed. It was just that they were so precisely presented in the way that they were outfitted, in the way they held themselves, in the way they behaved and talked. And it's kind of, I guess, what this conversation is ongoing at the moment about Facebook, is about how Instagram is unhealthy because it portrays an unrealistic reality. It's not a reality. And these people, seeing them in the flesh, just made me realize this is 100% performance. Like, this is not your life. This is not your look. That is not your hair. You know, those are not your clothes. Like, but this is the reality that you put forward as an influencer on that platform.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's up to people who look at those platforms to be able to tell the difference. And in these people's cases, I can't imagine it would have been that hard. But to tell the difference between, like, is this real life or is this just fantasy? I feel like I should bust this song. But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? But anyway, so this is my brush with reality TV. I feel like for one night only, I was on set of a reality TV show.
Yeah.
And it has thrown me slightly.
And it's got you quoting Bohemian Rhapsody.
It's got me quoting Bohemian Rhapsody, yes.
Fandango.
Okay, so that wasn't technically TV, although you've seen how I tried to make it like it was.
Yeah, that was tenuous. That was tenuous.
The one thing I have done is I finished Squid Game. So I'm not going to reveal it, but we had to give out, we had to put together for Empire, and you will have done this too, Beth, and you will have done this too, Boyd, your favourite films and TV shows of the year so far. So there's still room for wiggle on this. But I'm not going to lie, Squid Game made my list. Made my top 10. I'm not going to tell you where. We will reveal that closer to the end of the year. We're our review of the year episode. But it's really, really good, isn't it? In a way that I think, I mean, look,
good.
Hey, James's hot take. Squid Game's actually pretty good. Hey.
James is available for TV and radio appearances that Beth can't do anymore.
Now, Beth, have you seen Squid Game yet? Because you really should. I recommend it to you.
Do you know, it's next summer, it's after Friday Night Lights, and it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I'll get to it.
Yeah, good.
That bloody
good.
Episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia that someone else has recommended.
You still haven't watched it, have you?
No.
But just going back to Squid Game for a second. So I remember you said to me, Boyd, again, no spoilers for people who haven't seen it. If you haven't, you really should. But when you were saying, like, you know, tug of war and marbles, shit gets real. I was like, you were not lying. And all I'm going to say is, the bridge. If you know, you know.
The bridge.
But the bridge. Oh my God, the bridge.
Yeah.
There's some twisted genius in that show. Absolutely twisted genius.
Yeah.
The amount of Squid Game guard costumes, I guarantee you are going to see. In fact,
well,
Boyd.
Yes. Hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, my Squid Game guard costume will have arrived for the Halloween party I'm going to on Saturday night.
Are you serious? That's amazing.
Yeah, but it's coming from China.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm slightly, it's supposed
it may
to
not
arrive
time.
Tomorrow. But, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Make sure you don't get like a skin rash or something from it or whatever. With just, you know,
you got me
cheap
worried.
Halloween like costumes and stuff.
It's like made of rayon or something. Yeah.
But it's made like the sale of Vans slip-ons, which are the shoes.
I thought you were going to say like white Vans, like panel Vans, like people are abducting people off the street.
Yeah.
To
get
them
into Squid Game. Segue from this.
That was a Daily Mail headline in my head right there. Sorry, go on.
White slip-on Vans, which are what you see in the show. The sales have gone up 7,800% off the back of Squid Game.
I didn't know they were wearing Vans.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just what colour are they? They're like white Vans.
They're just white blimsoll.
There is the occasional close-up
the
of them. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Listening daps.
Yeah.
They just slip on daps.
Honestly, when Terry left, I thought we were done with our ginnels and our gipping, and now we've got, what are they?
Daps.
Daps.
Very daps to my mufti day.
I know what Mufti Day is.
Yep.
I don't know what a Chufty Bad is, but I know what Mufti Day is.
You know what Mufti Day is. But yeah, the slip-on daps that they wear in this, is fans have gone up 7,800% because of Squid Game. Honestly.
That is brilliant, isn't it?
It blows my mind.
Yeah.
That hope you've got your pair for Halloween.
Do you know what?
Well, the guards don't wear daps, do they?
Oh, maybe not.
No, I think I think it's the main character, isn't it, who wears them?
Yeah, it's the contestants.
Yeah,
the contestants.
Yeah, the contestants wear them. Oh, maybe all the contestants wear them, of course. Yeah. I don't think the guards do. I can't remember what the guards wear on their feet. That's a good point.
No, they wear black gloves. They have a black sort of nylon belt.
Yeah,
I can't remember what they have on their on their feet.
And a rifle. I've got a toy rifle.
Well, you can't. Now, I seem to recall, Boyd, that you told me you had ordered a square mask. Only the triangle guards have the HK MP5 submachine guns.
Here we go.
I think you're fine.
Here we go.
Boyd.
do you know, I can't actually remember what shape, what mask I have ordered. I genuinely can't remember. So when I said it was square, I can't remember. It could be triangle.
Well, we'll need to be triangle.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have to lose the gun.
Okay.
Amazing.
Fine. I'm glad you love it, though.
I genuinely
because
really
I was worried that you'd find it too much to deal with on a kind of, you know,
It's only a 15, Boyd, as we discussed.
It's only 15.
So
oh, by the way, one of our avid listeners who corrects every time we make a mistake, which is regularly, obviously,
of course,
says that BBFC does do the ratings for Netflix.
Do
so it's BBFC
they?
Who have a frankly
okay, well then we need to have a conversation.
Made it a 15. It
because
is
as it gets on, it really is though. But it's so it's not just the gore, and it is gory. There's some neck action at one point, which was horrible. But also it's the intensity of the violence and the scenario of the violence. And again, and I can't emphasize this enough, which is incredibly heightened and caricatured and stupid and funny, like is a hard 18.
Yeah,
and Squid Game is not, and that makes
it's
sense.
It's bewildering.
Yeah.
Last night in Soho, for example, is that 18, isn't it? Which I was...
I'm not sure.
It is an 18.
It's
an 18. And that I was like absolutely stunned by that. I think it's because there's some level of sexual violence.
Yeah.
I think apparently sexual violence is what pushes something into an 18.
Right,
often for the BBFC.
Yeah.
But it's a very... But generally, I came away from Last Night in Soho thinking, oh, you know, I really enjoyed that, and it's quite, you know, it's a kind of fun, you know, within the various contexts of what it's setting up, horror. But I didn't think it was 18 at all, even, you know. But yeah, it is. But where Squid Game, I'm thinking it's astonishing that it's only 15.
Yeah. But as you say, it's really good. But it's not just that it's the aesthetic, which is striking and stunning. Mm. And it's not just that it's exciting and the games and all that stuff to it. But there it goes places you don't expect. It's got some real emotional punch to it as well. I have questions. And we can't talk about it because they're spoilers. But I have many questions at the end of this series of things that are not tied up.
Yeah.
And not just from the final episode, but from the penultimate episode. Big, big questions. Cliffhangers, if you will.
I think there's definitely going to be a second season. They haven't, as we speak now, they haven't announced it. But there was an interview with the creator in The Guardian. He was like, you know, obviously everyone's open to a second series.
Yeah.
I think they're just waiting for the right moment, aren't they,
Well, he's even got storylines in mind, hasn't he? And he's said what he's got in mind for it, if there is one. I would be absolutely...
British Squid Game, where they go to the UK and it's what is it, Conkers? And then like Panini football 87 cards. Oh. Like they're swapping cards and whoever gets Kenny Dalglish wins and the other one gets shot in the head.
Yeah.
Prawn games.
Yeah. Be prawn cocktail games.
Sarah Phelps could write that as well.
She could write that as well. Yeah. Sarah, I hope you got room in your schedule for this stuff because it's vital.
I think the amazing thing about it is that final episode, actually anything I say will spoil it, but I like the fact that it has rug pull surprises.
It has surprises.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why even more reason to love it is that it does that as well on top of everything else that it's doing.
And genuinely
making you think about capitalism and exploitation and that stuff.
The whole show is about inequality and money and the obscenity of the ultra wealthy and the desperation of the oppressed, impoverished working classes. Like, it's a big old class struggle analogy.
One final question for me is, did you know that we had the discussion about the VIPs with the, you know, that people complaining about their performances. What did you think?
What was interesting about that is, so during that, I watched that first episode with the VIPs. I watched half the episode twice. So I watched it first time with the subtitles and then I watched it again with the dub because I was fascinated. Yeah. And obviously they don't dub the VIPs. The VIPs get their own voices. Right. Frontman speaks in English when he speaks to the VIPs, but he is dubbed even in the dub because they obviously have to keep him consistent with the guy who's been doing them up until that point. So I was just fascinated to see how they manage that. But yes, the acting of the VIPs is awful. Like, there's no getting around it. But my takeaway from that, watching it, if I hadn't known any of your Kubrickian analysis or any of that, I would have just assumed that it was English dialogue written by someone who didn't speak fluent English. That was my assumption watching it.
Right.
That it just felt like someone, this English is not their first language, so that's why they speak in that rather wooden, stilted way, because I'm not saying he's Google translated it, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's not fluent, it's not native spoken English, because people hopefully don't actually speak like that. But yes, they were very mannered. I think it doesn't help that they're kind of just awful. Like,
yeah, of course.
When they're on screen, not just because they're awful human beings, they take you away from the show that you're loving and introduce an element that maybe isn't particularly entertaining. So you're already, I don't think, particularly well disposed to them being on screen, and then their dialogue is quite wooden and shit as well, so yeah, it doesn't.
I kind of think they have to be there though, because it does explain to some extent what's going on, like it, yeah. You know, gives it a reason for the whole thing to exist, you know, to some extent anyway. So I think I'm fine with them. I'm fine with them, everyone. The creator of Squid Game will be pleased to know.
Chill out, guys. That second season can go ahead now.
For some people, said it ruined it for them. You know?
Oh, yeah, definitely didn't ruin it for me.
Strong.
That's strong, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think if people were watching the dub, they probably wouldn't even notice, because the dub all the way through has been that level of awful. Yeah. So it's just seamless.
The performances generally are very heightened, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, right from the start, the main guy...
Oh,
is,
very,
I
yeah.
mean, completely.
But becomes less so as the series goes on.
He does, yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah. That is, which is interesting.
Because
itself,
he's very caricatured initially, right. And then he becomes much more serious, as you would do.
Funnily enough, once he's witnessed the grotesque slaughter of hundreds of people.
Yeah, he chills out, he mellows out a little bit.
Out.
There's something, and I think this is fine to talk about, it's not really spoiled, but there's something about Gong Yu's character, Gong Yu from Train to Busan, who turns up in this as the kind of recruiter. That, I think, on the subway platform is almost one of the most sinister things. That's really, really creepy.
Yeah.
And like, I watched that first episode, that first part of that again, and it's like, ooh, he gives me shivers, because it's all smiles, isn't it? It's that smiles and it's that welcoming, come into this scenario where you will be horribly mutilated and killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have questions. Like I say, I have many, many questions.
Oh, yeah, there are.
Many questions about the motivation of many characters.
Yeah.
We should. Mm. Set up our own Squid Game.
Yeah.
And
that.
Oh God, I'd be dead at the first hurdle.
Really?
Well, I'd probably just lie down. It's like the zombie apocalypse question, isn't it? What would you do in a zombie apocalypse? Where would you go? What would you do? What would you pack? I'd just off myself, to be honest.
I'd be Negan.
Of course,
so Squid Game. What would English Squid Game be like? What, hopscotch? Like what?
Hopscotch conkers.
Conkers, definitely. Conkers.
Like a tag or something, I guess.
British bulldog.
Marbles is horrific. Fine.
How would
marbles
you make
is, marbles? Is globally marbles.
Marbles would work. How would you make stuck in the mud fatal?
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
Well, I guess it's just movement, isn't it? Similar to red light, green light. If you move, then you're killed. Yeah. Off ground tag was always a good one.
Off ground tag.
Cut my chin open doing off ground tag.
Jesus Christ! Yeah. How do you play it in Swindon?
Oh God, there's knives. flick knives.
It's not far off Squid Game, is what you're saying.
Okay. I turn into Negan with off ground tag in Swindon.
Listeners, never play off ground tag with Beth. Your life may depend on it. All right, good. Well, we will stage our own pilot Squid Game using all of these suggestions at some point in the not too distant future. But Beth, what have you been watching this week?
Well, I'll breeze through this, shall I? Because you've both taken about half an hour each, just solid half hour. James on something we've already discussed for the past 3 or 4 episodes. Cool.
And you've discussed on air at least 15 times. So
the belated James splaining of Squid Game.
That's right. Oh, yeah, Squid Game turns out is quite good. I recommend it.
For God's sake. I started Only Murders in the Building. Didn't piece together John Hoffman of Looking. Obviously, I just watched Looking recently. So I was absolutely thrilled when I pieced that together. Obviously wonderful. I was right about my seasonal watch. There's a really great scene in which Selena Gomez is wearing a big old pair of cozy socks in like Nora Ephron-esque apartment, and it made me feel very toasty. I was thinking why I hadn't watched this sooner, and it is the seasonal stuff. And it was, for me, Selena Gomez, not because I don't like her as an actor or a performer, you know, she's catchy. But she's always assigned to play kind of like the youth in a show. And the youth is usually quite unbearable. Like, it takes quite a lot for... If I was like, oh God, Steve Martin's writing the youth, I'm not sure how I feel about this. But she is a great character and really goes toe-to-toe with the two of them really well. I'm 2 episodes in and I love it, obviously.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
And I will try and get it watched before... Because I'm hoping the list we've had to submit isn't final. Because we had to submit very quickly our shows.
Well, it'd be an interesting hope. What if your Empire
Yeah, we had Studio Empire.
I think they were fine. I think you're fine, but you know.
Well, I can test that.
It was in my top 10, for sure. Yeah, it was in mine.
Oh, maybe it was in my top 10. Maybe it was. I'll come back to it. And then I actually did go back and rewatch my show of the year to make sure it was my show of the year. It's still my show of the year. Come on. Oh, we have fun, don't we?
Foundation. The Expanse, even though that's a bit
Guys, guys, you just need to hold that number one spot open because the final season of The Expanse does air on December the 10th.
What are you going to do? Because you will need to vote for that, won't you? Or have you just voted for it?
I'm saving the spot. I'm saving the spot.
Oh, what a pain in the arse. What's your favourite show of the year?
You're spoiling the review of the year special. What are you doing?
No, but I thought you were about to say anyway. I wasn't going to,
but I can do. Yeah, it was, for me, Feel Good, season 2.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. For reasons I would go into in our end of year. I mean, I hope
it might
change it. Yeah.
It might change.
Do you know what? Yeah. Sorry, Empire, but that's
Star Trek Discovery comes out very soon.
For goodness sake.
Oh, God.
But also, I did watch what I didn't include, but would be a strong contender. I got up early this morning to watch the first episode of Stafford's Flats season 3.
Oh yeah.
Before I could come in and talk about it, and I was so happy to the point where I got quite emotional watching it. I don't know if either of you have this, but I have a real emotional attachment to the show. I don't know if you've
James
ever...
doesn't. Okay, not with this one. No.
I mean, I know we have to watch a lot of stuff on our own. I shared this show with a friend who was very poorly when she was really poorly. Thankfully, she's okay now. But it was a show that made us laugh very much together during some pretty shitty times. And we just watching it and being back with those characters again made me so happy, and the comedy and the heart is still there to such a huge degree. Al saying that he's the big pig on the stairs is my boar on the floor. Yeah. 2021. So I was just thrilled, and it's got this wonderful new emotional strand where Stath is now a dad. The joke count in this is off the charts.
Yeah.
Off the charts. The characters are better. The writing is better somehow. I love it. I love it so much. I'm so pleased it's back. I really am going to have to try and ration it because I just...
Yeah, it's
already.
All four, isn't it?
It's all on all four. Yeah. I'm gonna try and do it weekly if I can, because I don't want it to end already.
I know what you mean,
to be back with them. I love it. I love it so much. Like such a great piece of writing, beautiful cast, beautiful, love it.
See, I watched one episode, which I think was the first episode of series 2, and I watched it in a hotel room on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
And by accident as well, because it was something which I thought we were going to be reviewing on the show, and then we didn't. So I watched it with no actual purpose, and I'm not sure whether though all of those various factors contributed to the fact that I was prepared to go on a tirade about it. But
oh God,
it's hard to say. Yeah, or it might just be me.
Yeah, I'm vaguely remembering this. Yeah, you didn't.
Oh no, I thought it was comedically terrible. But again, clearly I'm in the minority. I mean, so
this is a classic example of James not getting comedy.
Yeah, and I mean,
just didn't get it.
Yeah, it was again because I've got this like personal. It was a real testament to comedy and how comedy can kind of summon laughs at a time when you don't think laughing is like possible. So I've always had a real soft spot for it. And then on top of it, it's absolutely brilliant. Obviously bolstered by these amazing BAFTA wins. Like, I can't believe it beat Fleabag and stuff.
Neither can I.
But I'm quietly very happy that it did.
He's talked about in interviews that making it as flat out funny as possible is his complete main aim, and that is he pulls that off, doesn't he?
The
gag, right? I think he did take longer to write the series.
Yeah, but it's also quite tender because it's about his family. Yeah. I mean, his literal sister's in it, Natasha Demetriou, who I adore in What We Do in the Shadows, which again we'll talk about later. But it's got a real family dynamic, and then this kind of thing about being immigrants in London, the ridiculousness of the property market as well. It's just like. It's just fantastic. I love it.
And Charlie Cooper pops up soon. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. A native.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
No, still, James not be less interested in this whole stuff. Let's fight.
Well, I just don't know what you're talking about. It's really all there is to it.
Welcome to my life every single Thursday. Yeah.
That's fair. That is fair.
For 2 hours.
That is 100% fair. Right. Should we have a listener question? Should we do this thing? You guys picked one, as I recall. I'm not entirely sure what it is, so let's have a look and see what it is.
Boy did.
The one you chose, and notice how I'm just absolving myself of any responsibility at this point.
Yeah.
Comes from Thomas Emmett, and it says, this is actually slightly weird one, but it's fine. I've been listening to old episodes of the podcast during periods of insomnia. As a result, James Dyer occasionally appears in my dreams. But that is not my question, and I'm very pleased. My question is, what TV shows have you watched so intensely that you begin to dream about them, either being in the show or having elements of the show bleed into your dreams? I would say a lot of people must be dreaming about Squid Game. In fact, there was an article recently, I think, about this, about how Squid Game is affecting people's sleep. Like, it's
because
the themes are so heavy.
Yeah.
And as we've mentioned, the visual palette is so distinct.
Yeah.
You can totally imagine how that could imprint itself on your subconscious. So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, for one, I would like to hear more about the dreams in which you appear.
I think that is a box that never needs to be opened.
When people say, it's a real red flag, when people say, oh, you won't believe what I dreamt last night, that whole thing, kind of conversational game, is like, no one cares what your fucking dream is.
Yeah.
But in this case, when someone's dreaming of James Dyer, we really need to know more.
I would like to know, is it a fantasy?
Don't.
Is it a nightmare?
Mm. We're back to Bohemian Rhapsody again. No, it is not real life. It's not a fantasy. I don't want to know. But have you dreams? Do you dream about staff letting flats? Is this a thing?
No.
No?
No, I don't. I did have a little moment earlier. Trying to remember your dreams is a tough thing. But I do remember having really bad nightmares back in the day watching the Hush episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I'm not surprised.
And I don't think I'm alone in that. That was, so the one with the floating skull-like beings, I don't know the names of them. And then
the gentleman.
Yes.
Includes... one of the best sight gags in all of Buffy. It's the mimed masturbation gag, which is genuinely fucking laugh out loud funny.
God.
When she's miming how to stake someone and then she realises what she's doing and starts shaking her head wildly. It's brilliant. I love it.
But yes, terrible nightmares. Because I watched it when I was... To be honest, when Buffy came on BBC Two the first time, I stopped watching it after an episode because I couldn't deal with it. It was too scary.
Wow.
And then came back to it and, yeah, Hush undid all the hard work I'd done coming back around to the show. Horrifying. I'll be honest, I don't remember a lot of my dreams, but I did have one recently. And this lends to, I can't believe I'm saying it, it's really random, but my friend was a producer on Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It was being filmed at Pinewood for some reason.
Wow. Well, and the Netflix one, Revival.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She was a producer on it. And I got a cat recently, and my cat and I were at Pinewood Studios, and we've been tasked with getting rid of all the mice.
Great. While they were filming. That is good.
Was your cat talking to you?
She wasn't. I wish she was.
So not like the original Sabrina, then, more like the chilling.
Not
cat.
Like a Salem one. She was very good at getting the mice lover. But yeah, just a really wild, stupid, weird dream. But I think I've answered the question at least.
Well, that's good. Yeah. I've had dreams. I've definitely had dreams about being on set, watching stuff being filmed.
Yeah.
Which isn't quite, because obviously I have done that a lot in my 20 years of being Heat Magazine, etc. So I've been on a lot of sets. So I do have dreams, but I have dreams about going to the set of things that I haven't actually been on set of at all. So I've definitely had dreams about being on set of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I've definitely watched that being filmed.
Wow.
And sometimes it's so realistic that I do think, well, hold on, have I been on set of Curb Your Enthusiasm? No, in my dreams, literally in my dreams, have I watched that. Because I think it's partly because I am obsessed, fascinated by the process. Because, you know, Larry David writes an outline, you know, like 6-7 page outline, very detailed outline of each episode of what's going to happen. But it is fucking improvised. The dialogue is, which I find so ridiculous. And in fact, he was on the Late Late Show with James Corden last week, by the way, was really funny. And one of the funniest bits of it was the band leader said to him, do you really not script the whole thing? Come on, that's the truth. You really do. Because there are lines that are like perfectly honed little lines. And he's like, no, we, you know. So I find the whole process fascinating. And I've definitely dreamed that I observed it and kind of spoke to Larry and, you know, about the whole process. But that didn't happen at all. So there's that. And I think the only other I have definitely dreamt of Doctor Who when I was younger. I definitely, like, you know, in a similar way to your Buffy dreams, I think I've definitely dreamt of, like, the monsters that I was scared by most. There was a sea monster in the 70s that really got me for some reason.
Oh, the web thingy with the gills.
I'm
just gesticulating wildly around my face. But, you know, I know the ones with the little satellite dish guns.
Yeah, and I found those really creepy.
Yeah. Wasn't there one with, oh God, there was a Doctor Who one where there were, it was like a post-apocalyptic, like robots, but people were wearing brightly coloured clothes. I'm having an image. Yeah. I remember that scaring the living shit out of me. Because Doctor Who is a horror series, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for kids, it's quite harrowing.
It's very cleverly designed. If you know, even the episode, even though it was very famously, people took the piss out of being looking cheap and, you know, it was back in those days, filmed on video, and it has got a, you know, that Blake 7 cheap quality. But actually, because it was often so, the production design and the creation of the creatures, etc., was, I mean, the Daleks are fucking scary. Mm. That it did scare you, even though, you know, part of you knew that it was kind of cheap, put together with cardboard.
It was a simpler time.
The winning suspension of disbelief particularly came from the fact that the creatures were brilliantly designed and creepy and scary, and I did dream about a lot of them.
It's a question for you, boys. So Doctor Who, I remember, it might be because I was a child, but I remember Doctor Who being properly terrifying when I was a kid. Is it less horror-based now, would you say?
No, it's still a lot of that now. Like, in fact, funny enough, the episode that I talked about being funny also has some really creepy elements. Like, the Weeping Angels are brilliantly creepy.
Yes.
That you can't blink in their presence and all of that. So those ideas are still there. Yeah, it's still scary. And in fact, the new creepy skull like monster things that are in this first episode, the new series, are creepy as well. If you're you know, 12, 13, I think 11, 12, 13 years old, then you would find it pretty scary. Yeah, that element is a key to the whole thing. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. I've never dreamt of being in Doctor Who that I can remember. But I mean, clearly the amount of TV I watch, I've absolutely dreamt of being in. I'm sure most of these shows at one point or another, and just don't remember it. I've definitely been a member of the Enterprise bridge crew at some point in my dreams.
Yes,
I mean,
that
without a shadow of a doubt. Absolutely. I can't remember.
James T. Dyer.
Absolutely. Like, 100%. And I can't remember a specific instance, probably because it just happens so often that I'm just, I'm here again. Here I am in the captain's chair.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing. It's going to be Star Trek. It's going to be Battlestar Galactica. It's going to be one of those things where I'm on a space. Clearly that's going to happen. But I don't know. Like, I seem to recall having, and this would have been when I was much younger, dreaming that I was part of Robin of Sherwood.
Ooh.
Remember Robin of Sherwood? Look, me, Michael Praed.
Yeah.
Not Jason Connery, Michael Praed.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah.
I was one of the Merry Men. And I do vaguely recall being, you know, me and Ray Winston hanging out
Fantastic.
With Michael Praed in Robin of Sherwood. I do recall that. Because I used to watch.
Were you Friar Tuck?
I don't think I was Friar Tuck. I don't know who I was, to be honest. I think I was like an extra merry man. I don't think I slipped into one of the existing archetypes. But I remember, so I used to, obviously, that was a Sunday afternoon, evening type show originally when it first aired.
Was it Saturday or Sunday?
One of the two. I don't remember. I remember when we used to play Swords with my friends. I used to be Nazir. I used to like Nazir. He was great. But anyway, I remember when I was a teenager, they started rerunning them on Sky One on a Sunday lunchtime. And I remember I always used to have to get up.
Wow.
Because I was a teenager and lunchtime was when I got up.
Yeah.
I always had to get up in time to watch Robin of Sherwood on a Sunday. And I'd be upset if I overslept and missed Robin of Sherwood on a Sunday on Sky One.
I may
have digressed slightly from the original point, but I'm just saying.
What? You just reminded me, Grange Hill. I definitely dreamt about Grange Hill.
You dreamt of being in Grange Hill?
Yeah. Grange Hill had, various times had a big effect on me. Like, I definitely remember, I was watching Grange Hill avidly, you know, for years and years.
Did anyone watch Grange Hill avidly?
I think there was like, I think most people watched Grange Hill had like a maybe 4 or 5 year period where you watched it for 3, 4, 5 years and then you stopped because it was, you know, moved on.
How long did it run for?
Oh my God, years.
Because it was,
now,
I guess it was, it was a kid's soap, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. It went on for ages.
Because I never watched it. I know my mum didn't approve
of it. You never
watched it? Well, no, because I've told you this. My mum complained to the BBC about the way they spoke in Grange Hill. More of a Downton Abbey boy myself. I didn't.
Right.
I wasn't a fan.
31 series, 601 episodes.
Oh, my God.
1978 to 1998. And then 1998 to 2000. Like,
I had no idea. I remember Zamo and Tucker, and I don't think I remember anyone else.
30 fucking years that went on for.
Jesus.
So yeah, people, yeah.
And Mr. Bronson, who was in Empire Strikes Back.
Mr. Bronson, yeah, but that period, right, exactly, yeah. I was watching it avidly at that point, and I was definitely having dreams about me and Grange Hill, for sure.
Someone died in like a swimming pool, didn't they? That was a thing.
Yeah, yeah. It dealt with big, heavy stuff.
Grange Hill.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've answered that question or not, Emmett. Let's assume we did. Yeah. Oh, Beth answered your question. Yeah. Beth answered
succinctly
your question.
So
one of us answered your question. You now probably know much more about us than you ever really wanted to, and I definitely know more about you than I think I wanted to.
But, imagine if he dreams of us talking about dreams. Having listened to this podcast,
it's all getting a bit messy. Oh, yeah. If he starts dreaming of me in like a merry man costume, I don't want to know about it. So, Emmett, if that happens, please keep it to yourself. Okay, please, I think that would be for the best for everyone. If you have been dreaming about Boyd or Beth and wish to share your thoughts on that, then please do send them to us at Pilot TV Pod on Twitter. I look forward to reading about those. Shall we talk about this week's news? Did either of you see the Wheel of Time trailer?
Yes.
That
ridiculous, fucking stupid thing. Like,
yes.
Yes.
What I didn't understand was, we sent the email about this and by Amazon Prime, and it said it's on this YouTube 360 degrees something or other.
Yes.
It looked like a normal trailer to me.
So stupid.
Okay, so here are my things, and I apologize to all the Amazon publicists who are listening to this going, why are you doing this? But honestly, come on. So the idea with this is that it was a 360 trailer. It was the first ever 360 trailer. So I got my little phone out. Ooh, exciting 360. Eyes to die everywhere. It's going to be brilliant. Seasiding, etc. Anyway, you bring it up, and actually, it's a trailer, but it's 80% more shit than a normal trailer because you can't watch it properly because your phone is in a 3D environment where it's stone on the floor, stone on the walls, there's mist behind you, and there's just a TV essentially in front of you in this VR environment. So you have to align your phone perfectly so you can see the trailer, because if you turn it, you're just looking at like a sconce with a brazier in it or something. And it's just like, just show us the fucking trailer. And if you're going to do it in like a 360 3D thing, have something going on. Like, make it a 3D trailer. Like, this was the worst gimmick I've ever experienced.
Oh, I fully agree with you on this. God. But it was so stupid. I watched it this morning, actually, before I come in. And then I couldn't get it. Because it's only like, what, 2-3 minutes long? Yeah. Less than that. So I was trying to like, I missed part of it because I was trying to realign it.
Trying to find the screen. Like, where is it?
Some like wisps of sea or whatever the fuck was going on behind it. And then, so is that... Is that indicative of the format of the show? Are we getting some sort of immersive? What the hell?
It's gimmickry. But my whole thing was, like, there was nothing in the press release to show me where I could just watch the trailer without all of that nonsense.
Yeah.
And so I still haven't seen the trailer properly because I was forced to watch it while standing in, like, a chilly castle tower, which was unnecessary.
Well, I watched it on my laptop, so I did, and it didn't...
Did it still have the 3D-ness?
It's got like a little thing in the corner.
Yeah, no,
so you can look around.
Yeah.
So you can watch it normally. See, I was on my phone. That's where I went wrong.
You can watch it normally. But I was slightly underwhelmed. But I just think, I don't know, just judging it on the trailer, like Sophie Petzl tweeted about it, it's something really funny, that the performance, it seemed variable. Half the cast seemed to be in Doctor Who and the other half seemed to be in Lord of the Rings. So I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. So I was just mind me quoting her.
That is fantastic.
but she's
too late now.
Yeah. But she said it in a public forum on Twitter, so, you know. But fair enough. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't judge, can you, from it? Definitely is. No. I felt like almost more than any show of this kind, it did look a bit Lord of the Ringsy. There's like what do you call them,
the Trollocs.
Trollocs. Those things,
a lot of Trollocs.
There you go,
a load of Trollocs, one might say.
Right, so yeah, it looked quite YA. Is it a YA?
No.
Officially,
well,
no.
Okay. I mean, it's hard to say. It's the kind of thing where you could go YA with it, but it's not. No, it's not. It's not a YA series.
Fine.
But
fine. Okay. Well, fine. But yeah, it didn't put me off. But I equally didn't make me go, oh, this is the most amazing thing ever.
It's interesting this because it cost, I think, was it 8 or 10 million an episode? I think it's 8. Like, I mean, it's a lot. Like, it's a very expensive. Like, more than Game of Thrones began as. Like, it's properly expensive. And when we saw the first trailer of this, I remember saying to you guys, I'm worried it looks cheap. And now I know the budget of the episode. It is clearly anything but cheap.
Yeah.
That didn't come across from the trailer, but I think this is one of these things. So Bezos, like Jeff Bezos, wanted essentially their Game of Thrones. Like, that's the idea. They want something like that. And the idea with this, I mean, it's a huge series. It's like 14 books. It has scope. My concern for Wheel of Time, and I do think I'm going to really enjoy it because it couldn't be more me if it tried. My concern with this from a Prime Video point of view is I don't know that it has the crossover appeal they think it does. There's a really interesting piece on this in GQ, actually, where a guy, the writer was on set, I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but... was on set, and like he goes into the ins and out and the business cases for it, and you know, he voices a lot of these concerns from having spoken to him. Like, it looks really, really good. But the thing with Game of Thrones is, Game of Thrones was first and foremost a show about characters.
Yeah.
Characters, awful characters doing awful things, but fascinating. Like, it spoke to the stuff which is universal, and all of the dragons and the nonsense and stuff, that was window dressing. Whereas this is about dragons and nonsense. Like, it's about Trollocs and fades and one powers and messianic figures. Like, it's all big fantasy themes. rooms, which I think from Game of Thrones, certainly early on, were very secondary to everything else. And I think that more than anything is going to affect this show's crossover appeal, because this is proper nerd lore. Like, love fantasy or don't watch the show, kind of, to me. That's what it is to me. Your mileage may vary. And bearing in mind, I'm basing this on my knowledge of the books. I have not seen any episodes of the show, so I cannot judge it yet. I will let you know when I have. But that, so I do wonder whether this will have that kind of crossover appeal. Unless you guys think Game of Thrones has softened everyone up enough that they're now very open to high fantasy and sorcerers and, you know, white towers full of Aes Sedai and stuff.
I don't know. I mean, I'm feeling quite overwhelmed by that genre at the moment, and pretty at the epicenter of these streaming wars, which are now essentially how we watch television, is these massive bids to outdo each other. I was talking to someone, I met someone the other day who's going to be in the Big Apple Band of Brothers next thing. And he's like, you know, this is going to be Apple's big thing. And I'm like, have we not just had Apple's big thing with Foundation? And is, you know, Invasion not Apple's big thing? And now everything is, and Amazon, you know, this is our next big thing. And Lord of the Rings is going to be the next big thing. So I don't know how much I can buy into the hype.
We have nothing but big things.
When you've got, you know, this tripod of streaming platforms chucking the next big thing at us in this like really desperate, huge budget way to outdo each other all the time. So I'm feeling a little bit desensitized to it. If anything, my takeaway from that trailer is I loved Rosamund Pike and I care a lot. Mm. So I'm just, you know, excited to see what she's up to.
Yeah, same Rosamund Pike, totally.
Yeah.
That for me is like, even if it is a bit YA, I'm like, well, at least Rosamund Pike.
I don't think it necessarily will be.
No.
And she's great. Like, she is great casting.
Yeah.
Because that's a great character.
And they are honing in my emotional stakes. You know, we do what we want, like what we can for the people we love at any cost. And I'm like, well, that makes me care slightly more than the more kind of clinical sci-fi kind of things or fantasy things I've seen recently. But I'm just feeling really overwhelmed by this streaming war, you know, chucking money at the things for the sake of it, buying into this big talent, buying into these big concepts, you know, fighting over source material that means so much to people. It just feels very quick fire. And I'm sure this is the big thing and I probably will really enjoy it. I'm just like, my hype is tapered slightly.
The gendered premise at the center of it, I think, is interesting to me. Like, I think, and that's I think might translate very well to this show.
But HBO just, I've even forgotten what it was called. There was an HBO fantasy where it was just women who had superpowers, wasn't it? And set in like,
well, the Nevers, but that's not just, but mainly women. Yeah.
Mainly women. But, and I mean, has that been renewed on it? Do you know, like, I've already feel like I'm already a bit like, are we still tapping into this kind of zeitgeist of women having it all fight?
Well,
like
no. So this is slightly different. So you realise you've opened the door for this. So you know, like when someone's you know, testifying and this up, you've opened the door for this. This is what you've done.
Yeah.
So men can use the one power as well.
Right.
But it's split into two parts. There's Sidar, which is what women use, and Sidine, which is what men use.
Right.
But the men's half of the one power is tainted. So anyone who uses the men's power goes mad, like it makes them go mad. So you can use magic as a man, but it won't go well for you. So I that's quite interesting.
Okay.
The idea that sort of like they describe it as having, it's like the power's got like a film of like filth or oil on it. There's something just nasty about touching it, and it affects the men who use it and drives them mad.
Okay. I mean, it's still, and it was marketed that it's like, women get to harness this power in really interesting ways, men not so much. And it's just, I mean, I really loved
it. I mean, the main character's still a dude.
Okay. I mean, look how that worked out for Why I'm the Last Man.
Yeah.
To be fair. But yeah, I'm sure, and I'm not familiar with the source material, so I'm not really wanting to comment on this as well. So I'm pointing at James. But I just feel a little bit desensitized. And I'm sure this is, you know, part of our job as well. But, you know, it's the same for consumers. It's just this like bloody moneyed battle between like HBO Max, Apple, Amazon, Netflix. I just feel like we'll blink, we'll watch a few episodes of this, and then it'll be the biggest thing ever from the other one. I'm just feeling a bit too, just a bit too numb to it all at the moment.
Oh, I know what you mean, though. I'm very much with you. Yeah, I think. I mean, I kind of look.
You're saying we're having too much of a good thing is your concern.
I think the default idea of all of the big streamers, as you say, seems to be big, huge fantasy thing. We've got exactly what Beth just said. We've got to find our Game of Thrones. I think HBO is interesting because, like, I mean, they did do The Nevers, which was, I think there's still the whole second half of The Nevers, by the way, to come in next year. So you'd be looking forward to that, which was a variable, wasn't it? I mean, there was a whole big Joss Whedon thing going on with Daniel, wasn't there? Anyway, there about was. The whole creative showrunner thing going on. Which definitely, that confusion, shall we say, definitely made its way onto the screen, I think, to some extent. But I do find it quite exhausting, the prospect of another huge big fantasy world arriving in a 10-part epic season where each episode costs $10 million and the world building is going to happen.
Lest we forget, there is literally another Game of Thrones coming next year. So.
Yeah. Right, but what I was going to say, that was what I was going to say. I interrupted myself. What I was going to say was, at least with HBO, apart from The Nevers, they've got all of the, it's all in, they've got the Game of Thrones universe.
You feel like you've already done the homework.
Established. So yeah, right, I do. I do feel, so I'm less, so I'm like, I find it quite fretful in a way, yeah, having to enter into these issues. What was the one where was the big ship? And there was, like, I think it was on Netflix. Like, Netflix seems to have a lot of them. And, like, The Witcher. I mean, I found The Witcher, right? I watched that first episode. I think we said this when we reviewed it. And I was like, it's so confusing.
You mean Shadow and Bone?
Shadow and Bone, right. Yeah. Shadow and Bone.
The Grishaverse.
Yes. I was like, oh, no. Yeah. Like, all of that, I find it quite stressful to deal
this
with.
This interests me because I fucking live for this shit. Like, yeah, I like, give me a new mythology and I'm just like a pig in shit. I'm like wallowing in it. This is amazing. Give me all of this arcane nonsense.
Yeah, no, I find it daunting. Like, because they've all not got enough, that was very incoherent of me. They've all not got enough story, I feel, to drive them for the 10. That's partly the streaming bloat, if you like, that I feel they all have an issue with.
Yeah.
You know, you watch Dune, right? I mean, I was at the film, and the fact that he tells that story, I don't know, there's a second part coming.
It's half a story.
But the sheer amount of stuff that is transmitted in terms of the world building, all that in Dune. If he can do it in 2.5 hours, then I'm sorry, guys, you know, taking your 10 episodes each, there's no excuse for it. So I feel like that way about those shows as well, to some extent. So I'm definitely in the Beth camp for that, 100%. I hope that I'm open-minded enough to know when I watch the first episode or first couple of episodes and think, oh, this is something special. But I'm particularly not here at the moment for Lord of the Rings. And I know, like,
that's interesting.
Oh, God,
I mean, you've got a year to get excited.
I've got a year to... And I know it's got great people in it, like, people I know are in it, in fact. but... That fills me more at this moment in time, weirdly, with a bit of dread than it does, oh, I can't wait for The Lord of the Rings. I'm like, mainly because I'm not a huge fan of the whole, you know, the Hobbit films. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, but I understand it. But I think The Lord of the Rings, those three films were almost perfect pieces of cinema. Like, and they told that story beautifully. And then The Hobbit took a piss all over that sort of stuff. Yeah. And then the worry is that this will then further sully it.
Yeah, I mean, this is finding new strands of the Lord of the Rings world to tell this huge, big, epic thing that's going to be... Yeah. 10, 20, 30 hours. Oh, it does fill me with, you know, that's where I think, you know, just give me a fucking Succession.
Because you don't need to learn the mythology before you get into it.
It's a lot to take on.
That's interesting. Yeah. I think this is very much where our tastes diverge.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I
once
like
I'm into it, you know, I think the genius of that Game of Thrones, going back to your original point about Game of Thrones, was absolutely right. That it was the tone of that first episode, remember, which they scrapped, of course, and redid it.
Yep.
And I think that was so brilliant because what they ended up with was a really funny kind of cheeky, bawdy quality to it.
Yeah.
You know, once he's like, he's having incestuous sex in the first episode and he's chucking what's his name out of the window.
That's right.
Yeah.
Poor old Bran.
That brilliantly established it as something different and special.
Also,
and I still think it's very rare, I think, that happens like that. So it was kind of brilliant from the off and not the world building just happened while you're interested and excited about the sheer thrill of it all.
But also, when did that air? It was like 2013, 2014?
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. Even if you didn't watch it when it first aired, you caught up with it a year or so later because of word of mouth. And there wasn't anything else like it. Whereas now...
Yeah.
Everything is like it. Everything is like it. Or trying to outdo it or best it in terms of budget or concept or source material. It's just... grappling at anything they can get their hands on. Mm. And it's just a bit, yeah, just a bit desensitizing.
But has ever been thus? Yeah, do you know what I mean?
That escalated quite a lot from watching the trailer for the Wheel of Time.
It did. I just, you know, taking us back to Wheel of Time, I should say I'm 100% not here for stupid gimmicky 360 trailers.
So
kill them with fire. That said, I am very, very psyched for this show and I'm very much looking forward to it. So
we haven't got long to wait because it's...
No, I know. It's imminent. It's a couple of weeks, isn't it? Yeah, it's nearly here. Yeah. The Wheel of Time turns quite quickly, it turns out, and it will be here very soon. What else has happened?
Well, the big news of the week, for fuck's sake, was, obviously, Happy Valley.
Yes, coming back for season three.
Thank fuck for that.
How long is it? The kid's grown up now, is this what we've established?
The kid's grown up.
The kid's grown up. We can now...
That story, that I've always found... quite difficult to believe, but apparently, you know, because he is grown up and he's going to be in it, and Sarah Lancashire, James Norton, Siobhan Finner and all coming back. Sally Wainwright's written 60 episodes. That broke in the middle of the week and everyone, I tweeted about it on and the response, I've never seen anything like it, like the love for that show.
Yeah.
Which made me, the fact that I put it in my top 10 of the century.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Made me feel good that I'd done that because the response was so phenomenal from all kinds of people, actors and people.
I only watched it last year for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'd never seen ridiculous. It. Because, like Terry had said, it's one of the most miserable shows you'll ever watch. Right. And so I never watched it. And then I finally did. And it's brilliant.
Yeah. You watched both series?
Yeah.
Now I feel I want to rewatch them again. And I think they are on iPlayer, I think, again.
I mean, they are bleak as fuck. There's no getting around
it. Yeah, but they're so brilliantly done that. There are some shows that are incredibly bleak and have horrendous. I mean, the sexual violence in you know, that's a lot to
it is.
To
that's
with.
Why I struggle
are
with it.
Are you joking me? So you've watched it. I haven't watched it, by the way. But you've watched Happy Valley.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not
yeah.
Watch
yeah.
An Anime Destroy You, yeah. Which is not even...
Yeah,
Happy
of
Valley.
The hypocrisy.
Like, no, okay, so Happy Valley did traumatise me. Don't get me wrong. I struggled with that. But I like there were characters that I really rooted for and I liked, and I May Destroy You, the pilot failed the Bellend test. I'm sorry, it just did. Oh, so, you know, yeah. That was...
So you watched two seasons of Happy Valley. You won't watch three more episodes. An hour and a half of I May Destroy You. You're joking.
I mean, James' inconsistency are not, you know, I mean, it's all a big mess. But yeah.
I'm just going to close
you, so you haven't watched any Happy Valley? No. What tree you've got? Yeah. That's fantastic.
Do I? It sounds miserable.
Well, no, it's really good. It's really, really good.
Storytelling, the dialogue. She directs, you know, some of the best.
It just episodes. Doesn't live up to its name.
Right, well, the whole, yeah. I think you're going to
love it. When is the next season?
So they start filming in early 2022, and I think it'll end up being on, I'm saying, mid to late 2022.
Yeah, okay, sure. I've got a bit of time then.
Yeah, you've got time.
That is really good news.
Oh, yeah.
And Succession has scored a fourth season, surprising precisely
glad
no one.
I was sat down for that one. Jesus. I mean, it was inevitable, but is it going to be the last one?
No, I don't think so.
Do you not think?
No, I think two more. I think there's going to be five. I think, interesting, in the interviews that were done, first of all, in my interview with Alan Ruck, he referred to the fourth series pretty strongly. I genuinely thought it was officially acknowledged. I thought it was like, oh yeah, of course it's a fourth season. Because the way he spoke about it on my interview with him was completely like, it's happening.
Yeah, this is happening.
This is happening. Yeah. But it was only officially confirmed this week. But Brian Cox in one interview said he thought a couple more seasons.
Right,
and if he's saying that, he's so close to he's the one that I think, you know, the showrunners talk to about, you know, he finds out, as I said this in our special, he finds out the story arcs before everyone else.
Yeah.
I think he knows that. I think roughly five. And I think one more doesn't feel enough to me. I think there's more than enough. It could go on for years and years, but
we'll exhausted.
Yeah, but in a great way, surely.
I wonder if he... I mean, we're speculating, but I do wonder if he's going to make it to the end.
That will be interesting, yeah. I think it'll be fascinating, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I have absolutely no idea, but, I mean, you know, we hear... They've all said that the ending to the series was mind-blowing. I mean, what can that be, you know?
Yeah.
So, and they've talked about how, obviously, we all know that they were going to kill him off much, much sooner.
Much sooner.
So they could kill him off. But I think I'd be devastated if they do, because I think he's so fantastic.
I would. I just don't know how authentic that would be, even with his money.
If they killed him off.
If they didn't kill him off. If he kept
Rupert Murdoch's still going. Rupert Murdoch's like in his fucking whatever, 80s, 90s, still going.
Keeping that alive.
Yeah. I mean, if he's still going, then as far as I'm concerned, Logan Roy can keep going.
That's true. It's very true. You're right. I'm being too harsh.
Mythic Quest has been renewed for season 3 and 4.
I thought you were joking.
No, it has. It has.
Did you watch the announcement video for it?
I didn't know.
Absolutely fantastic. So it's Rob McElhenney on a video call with Anthony Hopkins, who of course did the voiceover for their special episode, and he's trying to get him to come back on, and he's like, yeah, maybe, and he keeps mispronouncing Mythic Quest, calling it Mr. Quest. He keeps calling Rob like John or Dan, and he's like, no, it's Rob, and he's like, yeah, maybe. And then Jason Sudeikis calls in.
Oh, I haven't seen this.
And is chatting to Anthony Hopkins, and Anthony Hopkins is trying to pitch to get on Ted Lasso. And saying that he could be Keeley's new boyfriend in the next season. And Jason Sudeikis is like, yeah, we'd love to have you audition. And that's the end of the video. It's really good.
That sounds amazing. I haven't seen that.
It's very good. Segging into some personal news for this week, I had a celebrity sighting.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how you feel about seeing some. I mean, you're friends with them all, so you probably just go up and say hi.
I was boyed with whoever you saw. Right.
Well, also, we have a whole spread in hate called Spotted, which I'm sure you know about. So
this is a good Spotted. I was at Beaconsfield service station.
Wow.
Yeah. And I saw a really good dog in the car park, so I stopped to admire the dog.
Just to be clear, was it a famous dog?
Or... No.
Right, okay.
I'm getting there. I've been in the scene. It was one of these sort of wrinkly dogs, and I was like, ha ha, stopped. Someone else was stopping to also admire the dog. It was Sarah Niles, aka the therapist from Ted Lasso season 2.
Oh, really?
Amazing.
Dr. Sharon liked the dog.
Dr. Sharon was also stopped, and she was talking to the owner about this wrinkly dog. And I was like rooted to the spot because I think she's great. I mean, we've spoken about Ted Lasso. Yeah. I'll be honest, that wasn't in my end of your list, but she was wonderful in it. But yeah, she was also admiring this dog. And then I had to sort of tail around the service stations to the women's toilets. So that was really funny.
That is a good spot. That's one of the best.
It.
Was she cycling or driving? This is very important.
She's wearing an amazing like royal blue kind of blazer. She looks really cool. But yeah, I just sort of trundle behind her because I mean, in like staged interviews and stuff, I'm fine. When I see anyone out on the street, no matter who it is, I lose it. Like, completely lose it. So I'm sort of trailing Sarah Niles.
People do get very excited about seeing famous people in,
listen, boys, people do get very excited. I mean, I personally don't, of course, because the amount of people that I just hang out with.
I would be excited if I saw anyone from Ted Lasso in real life,
Yeah.
But it's certain people. Like, if you saw Larry David, you'd lose your shit, wouldn't you?
Yeah, 100%.
You would lose your shit.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Anyone else, you'd say hi, and they'd go, Boyd, how you doing?
In fact, talking of Rob McElhenney, you know him and Ryan Reynolds were actually at Wrexham.
Yes,
I did know that. I saw the pictures. Yes.
I mean, that would have been fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very much here for them.
And so spotting funny them and weird.
In Wrexham. Yeah.
Right. Has there been any other news or shall we move on to reviews?
I mean, there has, but we spoke so long about the bloody thing of time.
We did. Anything you want to cover in dispatches or should we just move the hill of time? Yes, love the hill of time. All right, fine. Let's move on to this week's reviews. And let's begin with the show that we weren't able to do last week, which is, of course, Show Trial. This is the Beeb's latest candidate for Sunday night's Vigil slot. This one stars Sinead Keenan and Tracy Ifatua as investigating officer and defense lawyer in the case of a missing girl, which ends up putting a very entitled and very rich girl, who is also a bellend, in the dock. Innocent or guilty, Boyd?
Good question. This is the latest show, don't literally say that because that would spoil the show. I don't know yet either, by the way. So this is the latest show from the people who gave us Line of Duty. Did you say this already? No.
World Productions.
Thanks to Line of Duty and Visual World Productions, who have now colonised the Sunday night BBC One slot. And you can't blame them because they are so fucking good at this stuff, I think.
Yeah.
It's written by Ben Richards. He also did Cobra, Strike.
I was like, did we just do him?
Yeah. With Cobra, yeah. But this is on a whole other level, I think, it's fair to say, from Cobra. But Strike, you did a really good job with Strike, by the way, because Strike.
I love Strike.
Strike is great, we love Strike. Mm-hmm. And as you say, it focuses on this, I've only seen one episode, which I have to say, because the second episode will have gone out already, but I haven't watched it yet. But they're definitely rationing these episodes, quite rightly, and they're not putting it all out in one go. It's properly watching it serial, and I think it is instantly fascinating and gripping, the idea that this, as you say, this massive bell end, this spoilt brat of a young woman, Talitha, by the way, what kind of name is Talitha?
Amazing.
Brilliant bit of naming.
Absolutely amazing.
A brilliant bit of nomenclature. Because obviously she'd be fucking Tabitha at the very least. It's Talitha. It's fucking genius, I think. Up there with Tom Wamsgans from Succession in terms of naming a character. She is an objectionable person in every way. She's lumbered in her mind with the kind of duty solicitor who's dealing with the idea that she's been accused of having some involvement in a fellow student's disappearance and possible death. She's her incredibly horrendous, rich, spoilt dad, played by James Frain, is there involved as well. And the police element of it, the main lead detective is Sinead Keenan, who I love, who is absolutely brilliant in everything she does. This is brilliantly cast. But the whole idea of, you know, are we judging someone for being too posh and too privileged and too entitled and too obnoxious?
I mean, yeah, being too much of a twat, more
being too much
posh,
of a twat at a bell end, whatever word you want to throw over it, is a really good central premise for a series, for a story. I was instantly gripped, fascinated. I think the performances are all great. What I was very impressed with the casting of this, they haven't gone for massive stars, you know. Vigil, if you like, was a star-studded. Every character in Vigil, kind of quite, some characters were only in it literally for about a scene before they died, for example, were played by huge, big, famous people. In this, you know, these are all kind of either up and coming people, like Celine Buckins, who plays Talitha, or they're not, you know, James Frain, you know, not a huge star, Sinead Keenan similarly, but they're all brilliant in their roles, and they all kind of completely embody who they are, I think, and I can't wait to see the rest of it. So it's an instant massive hit for me.
Yeah, I think something that I'm always very cautious of with the BBC is the writing of young people. I've said it before.
Yeah,
I think I remember reviewing Noughts and Crosses for Pilot and being really feeling really let down by the writing of the young people in it. It was not good.
The youths.
Whereas this does it incredibly well, not just in terms of writing young people, but writing young wealthy people who, I won't lie, I wasn't one, but I used to work a lot of like silver service jobs for people like this. So got to kind of watch from the periphery. And I think this is very, very authentic, right down to her clothes, you know, wearing the bomber jacket, thinking she's a little bit urban, you know, the press on neon nails. She's kind of on the fringes of, you know, I hang out with minorities, but I'm actually really rich, which is just fantastic. They've got that spot on, I think, for a character like this. And you instantly fucking hate her. You do. I mean, that is inevitable. And I know that, you know, within that hate, you are second guessing yourself, because I'm sure she's not. I mean, it would be a pretty straightforward, boring show if she was exactly what she is on the tin. But we're quite entertained by that, aren't we? We're entertained by judging this bell end. And being in the shoes of the policeman, which, you know, takes a bit of work in this current day to kind of see from their point of view. But, you know, are all kind of like nudging each other behind their backs. And she knows she's a bell end as well. This is it. She's rich enough that she doesn't even have to care that she's a bell end. She can talk to anybody how she likes. She can treat people however she wants. And in her mind, she has no repercussions because of the world she grew up in. And I think that's a great performance as well. Expertly cast. Tracy Afika is essentially the mirror, you know, that she bounces off of, and is just a real master of poise and reserve. You can almost see the vein going in her forehead in this as well, which is wonderful. And the storytelling's great. I mean, I'm the same for once. I'm on the same level as Boyd and have only seen an episode instead of 12 or however many you've got through in a week. So yeah, I'm really interested. They're also drawing out other little, I mean, this is what they do so well, don't they, from this group of people, drawing out, you know, oh, there's a look there. There's a look here. So Kerr Logan's in this as another policeman with a partner with a baby on the way. And you can tell there's been a few too many close-ups on that there face to think that he is completely innocent in this. So I'm sure we'll see something else from him coming up. And then, Cleo, the barrister, she's also got a past as well that we're sort of learning about, where she grassed up her own company for a drug case. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with all of these. But yeah, really well written, and they've written young people well, which is something that we don't always see on the BBC.
Do you think young posh people are easier to write than young, like working class people?
Easier to caricature, actually. Yeah. I would have thought it would be
easier to caricature, but they did get the nuances for this, which I really liked, like the kind of cultural appropriation the haughtiness. I don't know. It's a tough thing to, I think it's quite a tough thing to, without making them too much of a caricature.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And I think they've done that really well here. So we don't find out much about Hannah in this episode, aside from she's missing and she worked in the service industry and wasn't very rich. Her mum as
working
well.
Working class girl.
Working class girl.
Yeah, there's a big class conflict thing going on.
And I think the mum is written really well. Her mum, who's obviously very, very stressed. They're not two-dimensional characters either. Even the secondary people who we only see for a few scenes have got a lot to work with, which I really liked. Sold is the short.
It really is, isn't it? It's so slick. It is so slick.
Yeah.
And also really pacey. Like the first 5 minutes of this covers so much ground.
Yeah.
Because they're just, look, we need to get to this point. And obviously, you know, we've all seen Law and Order. There's a crime. There's an investigation. They're like, no, let's fast forward through all of this shit and get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
Which is great because you're really like out of breath, I think, in that introduction. Because you're like, oh my God. And this, and now we're here. Oh, wow. And you've been arrested. And Christ. Like a lot happens before they've even done the title sequence. Mm. And then you get into it and it's that fascinating idea of subverting expectations, because we always have that, you know, that built-in bias that we bring with us. And with her, it's partly that she is a screaming bellend, and fair play to Celine Buckins, who does an extraordinary job of playing that character and making her so unlikable. But not because she's necessarily a bad person, but because she is, exactly as you said, she's so unbelievably entitled that she doesn't need to come across in a good way. Like, she doesn't believe there are any consequences to anything she's done, because, you know, she can just buy a way out of it or pay for a solicitor. And there's a line she uses where she's kind of being very, very rude to her own brief, to be fair, to Cleo, the duty solicitor. And she was like, you know, do a decent job on this, love, and maybe I'll keep you around when I sue their asses. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah.
So you really, really almost like you want bad things to happen to her because she's so awful. And there's that class war part of you that almost bristles so much at the idea that the reality of this, the fact is that money does buy you essentially out of a lot of situations, and justice is for people who can afford the best solicitors, barristers, whatnot, you know. And the fact that she does sort of exist in this sort of cushion from the reality of the world by her wealth and the entitlement that goes with that, you want her to get it. You really do. And I think they've really tapped into that very, very, very British fundamental divide between, in this case, not like middle class, upper class and working class.
Yeah.
Like she is proper blue blood upper class. Yeah, I thought this was great. Really great performance, as you say, very layered characters. And if I can offer an awful lot more than you guys have already said, except for the fact that this is like crack television, isn't it? I was like, oh my God, give me more of this now.
Yeah.
Please, more.
They're doing so well, aren't they? Oh, they're just on a real winning streak.
Yeah, very, very good indeed. So Show Trial, which is in the Vigil slot, as it shall now be known, on Sunday night on BBC One at 9 o'clock. Next up this week, we have The Premise. Coming from the mind of BJ Novak, this is an anthology series that tackles a different social issue each week with a revolving cast and a short 30-minute episodes. I was going to say, this is a comedy anthology initially, based on the first episode, which is comedic. Yeah. But then I watched the second episode, which is very, very far from a comedy episode. What it is, though, is bite-sized. I think we can safely say that. So is that a shrewd narrative choice, Beth, or just a blessing for the viewers?
I mean, a blessing for the viewers and us. Like, honestly, the sigh of relief when I opened that show folder, I'm like, oh, thank God. It's half an hour long. So I do love that. I think the best way that I kind of approach this, it's like Black Mirror but without the metaphors or genre or anything. Really, like, it's like the very core of what Black Mirror is trying to say, except it just says it.
It's not clever about it.
It is incredibly measured. So BJ Novak, American, generally a comedy writer, you would be right for thinking that this would be a comedy, and it certainly has a decent amount of satire in it. But yeah, he was a writer on The Office. I think he's written some novels, short stories. He's kind of David Sedaris type black comedy author, apparently with a load of pals, because this is what this feels like as well. It might as well be called Look Who's Friends with BJ Novak, because it's got an amazing cast in it. So the episode that James referred to as being pretty traumatizing stars John Bernthal, Ben Platt's in this, Caitlin Dever, Lola Kirk, who else have we got? Just a lot of Jermaine Fowler's in the first episode. So this massive all-star cast that he's kind of reined in for this anthology, which is described, and I don't like this, as an anthology for now.
I know, that's a whole world of fuck-off, isn't it?
That's a cult is what that is. And it does... So yeah, the way that it's kind of packaged, I don't necessarily like. And every episode begins with BJ Novak as this kind of like Twilight Zone host coming in, like setting you up for it, which is completely unnecessary and feels a little bit self-involved. That said, it is very intricately written. So yeah, a different social issue every episode, and it's usually from multi viewpoints as well. So the first one is called, I think, Social Warrior Sex Tape.
Yeah,
stars Ben Platt. He is coming into a police station because on the sex tape he has recorded, it has caught in the background a police arrest that can helpfully shape the outcome of a young black man that's been put on trial by police. And Ben Platt is, to his credit, really giving it his all in this sex tape. It is quite a funny sex tape as sex tapes go. So he's having this conversation and it goes to court and it's about the court case. And then it's told from various different points of view. So Ben Platt is like the social warrior who, you know, tweets about social causes, hashtag BLM, etc. But at the same time, is only willing to go so far when his butt is about to be shown to a whole courtroom of strangers. But it considers his point of view as someone who is really trying to just do his best without getting cancelled. But everyone seems to be out for him to be cancelled, even though he's not necessarily a bad man in the scheme of things. You've got Jermaine Fowler's character, who is obviously, you know, every black man in America right now, let's be honest. And then you've got the lawyers as well. And it's trying to kind of balance the different points of view here. And then the John Banthal episode really goes for the emotional punch, where he works for a guns company, an arms company, I guess, as a PR, but lost his little girl a year prior in a mass shooting. Yeah, lol a minute, that one.
Quite the tonal shift between those two episodes.
Massively so. So, yeah, it is very, very well written, I think, in terms that it really takes lengths to consider every point of view within every story, which is obviously tough work to do it well and give everyone a platform. It just felt the same way I feel about Black Mirror sometimes, in that it goes too far in trying to get its message home and it borders on preachy. So that was some of the issue I took with it. Great ensemble cast, obviously. I'm a sucker for people like Caitlin Dever, Lucas Hedges I love as well. But yeah, a little bit too preachy, and I hate how this is packaged.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't think it helps that the episodes start with that to camera piece from BJ Novak, which is just excruciating.
It was your issue with them, Scenes from a Marriage.
Yeah, like, it's very smug. Yeah. Very smug.
It is, yeah. It's unnecessary.
Look, the first episode of this, I hated it.
I thought you would.
Absolutely hated it. I thought it was painfully unfunny, and it tried to make this quote unquote subtle point with a sledgehammer to the head.
Yeah.
And I was perfectly prepared to set this on fire. And then the second episode I actually liked. I thought Berntal was an absolutely inspired bit of casting in that role, given he is the Punisher. Really quite a powerful piece. Again, it's not particularly subtle, quite
not
frankly. It makes its point really directly.
It's not subtle, like, in any way whatsoever.
No, you're absolutely right. It's not subtle at all. I mean, I don't think it even tries to be. It takes half an hour to get a very clear point across in quite a powerful way. Mm. And obviously, this is aired as a Hulu show, so it's aired in the States, not in its entirety, I don't think, but a bunch of them have aired. And my gathering, certainly from what I've read of this, is that generally the comedy ones are the weakest, because the comedy doesn't really land. And it's when it goes into the dramatic territory that I think it tends to have slightly more weight to it. Mm. And certainly that was my experience of watching this show. I thought the comedic one had more discussion of Ben Platt's scrotum than I absolutely needed first thing in the morning. But more than that, I just found it awkward and just like, I was like, this thinks it's a lot funnier than it is.
Yeah.
And that's really awkward. It's just like, you guys aren't in on the fact that this isn't actually funny. Whereas when they'd abandoned the humor and they were just going for, I was like, okay, now I'm rolling with this. So yeah, I mean, I based on this, I liked one, hated the other one. Make of that what you will.
I think there are too many anthology shows for a start. I think there's a whole, it's gone from,
well,
when
I don't like anthologies
when Inside Number 9 came along, which is still the best of them. I mean, Black Mirror is great. I love Black Mirror mostly, you know. There are some that don't work, but I think Black Mirror is an exciting, every episode feels like an exciting prospect to me.
Yeah.
And the same with Inside Number 9. But once they both became a thing, I feel like everyone now, all of the streaming services, they all want their own anthology shows. We've reviewed quite a few. I mean, they are hard to review. This is partly a kind of whiny first world problem, critics problem, because, you know, it's kind of unfair to only watch a couple of six.
Throw a dart, hit an episode. Yeah. Will it be good? Will it not? Who knows?
But I think the problem for me about this anthology series is that that
The reason BJ Novak is doing that really annoying introductory thing, by the way, is because there's no linking. There's really no link between them tonally.
Yeah.
In theory, so the official description, by the way, on Wikipedia is each episode tells a single character-driven story about a current world issue. Right. All right. I mean, are they though? is the first one? Is the sex tape one a world issue? And not the way it plays out, really, because it's so preposterous. And I agree with you, James. I think I thought it was painfully unfunny. And the worst thing about it was it starts out quite realistically. Mm. It starts out with, you know, it's a funny, stupid premise that there could be a sex tape and in the background some key thing that could allow an innocent person of colour, particularly in this case. I guess that's why they say it's a world issue, racism, all right, sure. But, I mean, it starts out with a kind of tone of realism and then almost like after 10 minutes, suddenly in the courtroom element, decides to go for broke and be absolutely stupid and trying to be funny. And the joke about, all the jokes about his scrotum and stuff, you're like, well, I mean, this is just farcical. This would not happen in a million years, what we're having to watch for the next 10, 15 minutes. So I really didn't like the first one either. And the second one I did, in quotes, enjoy. I did, you know, I as you say, John Berthold is brilliant. I like the idea of it, to confront the gun lobby.
Mm.
In any way, is great within a TV drama, and it did it quite effectively. But I also found it almost unbelievably unsubtle, and I didn't like the ending. I thought the ending was kind of, I don't know, I just didn't buy it. I didn't buy that at all. So I just feel I don't necessarily need. I think it will take a lot for me to watch any more of this series of an anthology show. And there are at least three or four other anthology shows that are kind of trying desperately to be to have a theme. But I think the only thing that's linking these is Bijan Ever, which is why he's introducing them. I think he's really a smart, clever guy.
So
I'm pleased that he's got this outlet for his writing. I've listened to him on Brett Easton Ellis, has had him a couple of times on his podcast.
Yeah.
And he's a very interesting character, a very interesting figure. He's got a lot to say. But as I say, it will take a lot for me to watch through any more of these, even though the fifth episode is called Butt Plug.
Well,
With Daniel Day-Kim.
Should have started with that.
With Daniel Day-Kim. So, I mean, that, what the fuck's going to happen in that one? Who God only knows.
Yeah.
But I didn't buy it enough for me. It's not Inside Number 9. It's not Black Mirror.
No.
Well, that is the premise. And this comes to start on Disney Plus on Wednesday, the 3rd of November. Finally, this week, we have the not Kenny autobiographical drama, Dalgliesh. On Channel 5, this is, in fact, the latest P.D. James adaptation and stars Bertie Carvel as the man in question, investigating a dead nurse in this version of Shroud for a Nightingale. Isn't that right, Boyd?
Yes. This is a new... So the Adam Dalgliesh books written by P.D. James have been adapted for television quite a few times before. Roy Marsden played him in an ITV version. Martin Shaw, the legendary Martin Shaw, who I did a Zoom interview with recently and is a legend, he played him on the BBC adaptation. And now, what I'm fascinated by is Channel 5 is commissioned and showing these. And there are, I think, six episodes, three stories, three two-parters, running Thursday and Friday now. And they're definitely expanding there. They've also got a Saturday night drama, with a comedy drama thing at the moment, which is doing quite well, I think, from Sally Lindsay. They're definitely, like, Channel 5, I think, is by stealth. And we've reviewed quite a few of their dramas on this show, of course. Blood, Sarah Petzl's one, being probably the best. But now they're having more than one drama a week. They're having two-parters. This is a prestigious kind of feel to it, this whole thing. I've read some of these novels, and P.D. James is an absolute legend, and some of them are phenomenal. Bertie Carvel is a top actor. So I just feel this is a whole part of a whole Channel 5 kind of getting classier. And they're also doing, I think, notably fewer of those quite exploitative, you know, people on benefits kinds of shows that they made famous. And I feel like almost like, and then they announced last week that they were doing more news coverage. I think almost like somehow Channel 4 is by stealth turning into like BBC Two or something,
Whoa.
You know, and doing a really good job of it, really.
Yeah.
This is the kind of story of this is that this is set in the 70s. And I think what they're going to do is, because she wrote about this character from the 70s through the 80s and probably even to before she died, that they're going to follow him through those ages. So that's going to be quite an interesting process, how they age him.
Another
anthology, effectively. But I really enjoyed it. I think he's brilliantly cast. I think Bertie Carvel is really good as the character. He's a very kind of no-nonsense, doing his job diligently. diligent, no frills kind of detective. He doesn't want to be bothered by. He's very firm but fair. He's kind of treats all the suspects and the interviews of the suspects in there's a kind of clarity to him.
Yeah.
And his approach that I think is really good. And he's kind of saddled with a bit of a doofus of a sidekick, who is played by, what's his name?
Jeremy Irvine, which I will get to.
Right. he's saddled with a doofus of a sidekick played by Jeremy Irvine, who was a massive star.
What is Jeremy Irvine doing in this show?
Right, it's weird,
show?
Isn't it?
I mean, Channel 5's coming up. It's like, not like HBO and Max. What is...
It is odd,
Jeremy Irvine?
He's like Warhol Steven
my
Spielberg.
Sir.
I mean, look, he was in 10 episodes of Treadstone. Let's not overstate his CV.
Yeah, I'm talking
about
current.
What even was Treadstone?
It was the Bourne spin-off TV series.
Oh, yeah.
But right. I mean, his next project is Green Lantern with DC. Like
it's
a high-profile thing
yeah.
where he's going to be a gay superhero. Another, once again, another first gay superhero for another time. That's for another time.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's just weird. I mean, good on him.
It was distracting for me. Fine. I'm stepping on your toes here, but
no.
I found it quite distracting casting because he's like wholesome, handsome Jeremy Irvine playing a bit of a doofus, making dreadful jokes and quips that like Gareth would make in The Office about
was
watching
like that.
Pornos.
Yeah, you're right. He was like that. But I thought he was very entertaining though. And I like the fact that the kind of very super dignified Dalgleish, that's what he is. He's kind of oozes dignity.
Mm. Yeah.
Is saddled with this total doofus of a sidekick who goes out for a fag and barely seems interested in the case, by the way, which is a nurse has been killed. It's the very first scene. It's a hard scene to watch. So she's being treated, but she's in this nursing home. She's being treated and dies somehow in a rather horrible way. And it's the case is, you know, was it foul play? Clearly, you know, they think an accident's happened, but clearly something's going on. And they're all the nurses are suspects, really.
Yeah.
There's a kind of Aggie sister played by Natasha Little very well, I thought. I just think this is classic TV drama whodunit. Nicely, I thought all the casts were great. I thought all the nurses were really good, really cast really well. But I think Bertie Carvel carries it. I just think he is really perfect for the role, and he and I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was really, you know, it's not like it's not flashily directed. I think it's kind of fairly straightforwardly directed, and it's not trying to be, you know, this super slick kind of visually dazzling thing. It's just telling the story, telling a classic whodunit story as neatly and effectively as they can, with a kind of touch of class, I think, generally, and dignity about the whole thing. So I really liked it.
Yeah, formula worked really well. I liked him in the lead. Again, Jeremy Irvine just threw me off. Threw me off. I can't get over it. I think it's just my preconceptions of him made it slightly distracting because I know him as, you know, this like dishy British taken Hollywood type who was in the Mamma Mia film, you know, and my also, you know, he's got Spielberg and now he's in this Channel 5 murder mystery drama. But I, as you say, fair play to him. It was a really effective murder. I mean, I will say they're getting more creative with telemurders, aren't they? It's,
Presumably this one's taken directly from that book, but yeah.
Yeah, it must be. But still, the way that was staged and orchestrated was really uncomfortable and impactful. I think some of the writing with some of the nurses was a little bit stocky. but I generally like that lead performance. And the formula worked really well. I'm really enjoying... I mean, this is something that Sophie's so great at, is kind of hitting those points in the plot, hitting those twists and turns so precisely. And I think that works really well. It's proper tea time murder mystery, which isn't necessarily to my tastes, but that's not to say that it isn't well made and performed.
That last bit you made, that I think that is my whole sentiment towards this show. It is a tea time murder mystery and it is very good at what it does, but it is not for me. It's fine. I had no real desire to press on with this at the end of it, but I thought it was extremely well made. And that, I will say, I think the standout for this is 100% that first scene, because there's so much going on in the murder scene, which is the very first scene of the episode. So much going on between the characters. Like, it's not just like, oh, someone comes in, we don't know anything about them, they're getting murdered. Like, there is friction, there's tension from the get-go, there's an undercut, there's an accusation. Like, it has to be said, it said the nurse, bless her, and I can't remember who the actor is, but the nurse who does get murdered at the beginning, like, that is a hell of a... the face acting that she does just before that happens is impressive. So hats off to her.
Yeah.
But yes, I thought this was very well put together, very well executed, beautifully shot. I thought Jeremy Irvin was very entertaining as well. I will be having my tea while watching The Witcher. Thanks.
I mean, it's not actually on tea time, by the way. It's not 9 o'clock.
Is it?
Yeah. You might have a late tea.
Yeah, Thursday
and Friday. You're right. But you made a good point, though, which you are thrust into the middle. That's what I liked about it, actually. You've hit the nail on the head, even though you...
Inadvertently.
Yeah, of course. But it does thrust you straight into the whole thing. No nonsense. Yeah, here's the crime. Here's this woman's died. You're immediately... All the nurses have different reasons for suspecting them. They're all behaving, some of them, quite weirdly. And you're right, there's conflict instantly. And I like... That's why one of the things, the best things about it. It doesn't mess around.
Yeah. It does not mess around. That is then Dalgliesh. Still waiting for Sarah Phelps's Kenny. And that airs on Channel 5 on Thursday and Friday this week, 4th and 5th of November at 9 o'clock. Not actually tea time, but you know what we're saying. But that's not the only thing out this week, is it? Boy, there is so much out this week. We've covered off Kerr, we've covered off Doctor Who already. The L Word Generation Q Season 2 comes back. Now, did we review this and I was off that week?
Do you know what? I don't think we did. I think it arrived last time in a very busy week. I don't think we did review it.
This is on Sky, so Season 2 drops on Sky Atlantic on the 3rd of November, but I watched The L Word, the original one, but I've never watched Generation Q.
Same.
Alright, well, since we've not seen it, we can't really talk authoritatively about that, but if you like it, then go for it. That's coming back. But what else is happening, Boyd?
Station 19 is back on Sky Witness on Wednesday as well at 10 o'clock. That's the firefighting drama. Dickinson, final season.
The final season.
A lot of people love Dickinson.
Yeah, the third and final season of Dickinson. I think she's really, really good in it, but I didn't press on with it.
I interviewed her for one of the very first podcasts we did. I think Apple TV launched, didn't it, roughly?
Yes. That's right. That's one of the launch shows that we did. We did that. We did C, which of course was the standout.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the first series of season, but I have to say I did not watch any of season 2 of Dickinson, and now season 3 is here.
While we're talking about Apple launch shows, can I just say I had a very spirited WhatsApp conversation last night with Pilot TV's own Terry White, who has just finished the morning show season 2 and has lots of thoughts in capital letters.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
She is not a fucking fan of that at all.
I saw a tweet when she was like, bumpy.
I mean, it is. She's right. It is bumpy. Yeah.
No,
I still enjoyed it, though.
Can we just dial her in for this?
Yeah, dial her in so she can go on a rant about the morning show season 2. Because remember how much she loves the morning show.
A lot of people agree with her. A lot of people have said they didn't like season 2. It is fucking all over the place. It is an absolute mess. Things is that when I really enjoyed it.
When we reviewed, like, I hadn't seen, obviously, at all when we reviewed it. And I think it started okay, it had promise. And then it just. What was happening?
Yeah,
like genuinely, like the latter part
now,
of
then?
That.
So I lose track.
I'm not sure that it has actually. Okay. So I'm not sure we can.
There's
talk.
One scene I'm still desperate to talk about. I'm calling it in the car shouting scene.
I'm pretty sure we're at that.
We must have had the car shouting scene.
The car shouting.
That was unbelievable.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
that is a lot.
So much
fucking
shouting.
Exhausting. That was exhausting.
Yeah.
That was. They must have just had to get out of that car and just lie down on the road because that was absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, it really goes for broke. It just kind of like goes quite just insane in that sense, in all kinds of moments. And that is the classic moment where it goes fucking nuts.
I don't know why. It feels like that season feels like the product of a bunch of people who just went round the bend in lockdown. Like, I don't know. It's just all over the place.
Yeah.
It's so lockdown heavy as well, isn't it? I mean, it's really it's the most lockdown-y.
Well, not even to lockdown, it's pre-lockdown, isn't it? But it's sort of emergence of the pandemic.
In terms of dealing with it as a subject for the season.
Sure. Yeah.
So much of it is lockdown.
Yeah, which I'm not sure was a great movie either. Yeah. But,
it wasn't. And that's such a shame because I really liked in the first episode the almost comedic timing of, was it Billy Crudup's character? Was like, oh, things are finally going to go well. And then he looks up
and
the family is suing the company. And he's like, oh, and then a guy walks past and coughs and that's the end of the episode. And I was
That's great. Yeah.
We're back. And then it just got so bogged down. I'm going channeling Terry here, but like what I've just taken away from it is they all hate each other. None of them can live without each other, which is Succession, but not as good.
Yeah. I love the fact that we've ended up doing an in-depth review
of the morning show. I don't know how we got onto this.
It was Dickinson.
It was Dickinson.
Dickinson's back on Friday
Dickinson's
on Apple TV Plus, which final, third and final season. Yeah.
We'll find out what Terry thinks about that next week.
Yeah. Narcos Mexico, also its final season.
Can I confess something?
Yeah.
I've never seen an episode of either Narcos or Narcos Mexico. Okay. I've never watched a Narco.
Well, Narcos was a big deal.
Yes, massive. Yeah. I've never seen it.
Mexico, slightly less. Even though Diego Luna was in it, etc. But I did watch quite a lot of the first season, but again, trailed off.
So clearly not essential
for
him.
No.
And now that's back. you know the real shame that we can't review is Close to Me, which is on next Sunday, which we'd normally try and review, but is embargoed by Channel 4 until Tuesday. So it was either going to be delay. It is fascinating. Chris Eccleston, Connie Nielsen, and the whole plot. I'm not reviewing it. I'm just describing it to you. Connie Nielsen is at the bottom of the stairs and in a pool of blood. She then wakes up in hospital. This is the very first scene. A year later, and has to piece together the missing 12 months of her life. And is she or isn't she? Was she pushed? Did she fall? Was she trying to do something with herself? And I've watched three episodes. I'm not reviewing it, but it's fascinating. And can I say this? I think I can say this. Connie Nielsen, I've never seen a character have to cry as much as Connie Nielsen does in a TV series. She has to do so much fucking crying.
Wow.
I don't know. And she does it brilliantly. But it is fascinating. Close to Me starts on Channel 4 on Sunday at 9 o'clock, the same time as Angela Black and Show Trial.
Oh, my God.
You've got three fucking, essentially three. One of them may or may not be good. I can't say because it's embargoed. But at least two, plus another kind of psychological thriller, drama, crime things on at the same time. There we go.
It's too much.
Wow. That is a lot. What is our pick of the week then?
Oh, What We Should Do in the Shadows. We forgot about that.
Yes, we got another one. What We Do in the Shadows.
BBC
a show.
BBC Two Tuesday.
Which I'm not up to date with, but when I watched it, thought was fantastic.
Great. It's really
so
fun.
Great. Yeah. So great.
And I think that's dropping in full on iPlayer a whole of the season, I believe.
Wonderful. So,
yeah.
Great.
Anything else, Boyd?
I think that's it. Let me just check.
Sure.
AP Bio. People do really like AP
Bio. I've heard that. Sorry.
Yeah,
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia's Glenn Homerton.
Yes.
Never going to watch it now.
That's back. Sky Comedy Tuesday, 10 o'clock. People really, really like it. But, and yes, it does feature that very man.
Feel good comedy starring in Always Sunny, James running for the hills.
Yeah, absolutely not.
That is it. That
absolutely
is it.
Not. Okay, right. Given that the lights have just gone off in the studio and we are now sitting in the dark because none of us have moved for so long, what is our pick of the week?
Well, Show Trial.
It is very much Show Trial. Okay, great. That is then it for this week's show. As ever. It makes a huge difference if you give us a nice 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. And you can also feedback to us directly at James C. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, and at Beth K. Webb. Next week's show would see us watching Will Ferrell, Catherine Hahn, and Paul Rudd in The Shrink Next Door. But it won't, because it's Apple. Therefore, it's embargoed. So we can't do it. But hopefully what we can do is Dexter, because Dexter New Blood. Dexter makes his triumphant return with Dexter New Blood, and we have asked for screeners. Haven't got them yet. May not get them, but let's assume that we will, or frankly, my dark passenger will have something to say about it. Pilot out.